Good morning, Oregon. I'm Finn J.D. John, Finn at OffbeatOregon.com, and this is the Daily Offbeat Oregon History Podcast. Thanks for loading me down and queuing me up, and I do hope you enjoy the show. This story was first published on December 23rd of 2012 under the headline, Shamawa School, an Oregon Cultural Treasure. Here we go. On the northernmost outskirts of Salem, tucked quietly away on a 275-acre campus between Interstate 5 and Highway 99, is the oldest continuously operating Native American boarding school in the country. This is the Shamawa Indian School. It's a place built specifically to suppress Native culture, but which instead became instrumental in helping preserve it. Shamawa got started in 1880, and it's been educating Native American children and young adults ever since. At that time, it was part of a new movement in government policy toward the Native population, a movement away from the Andrew Jackson philosophy of outright ethnic cleansing and toward a policy more akin to forced integration. Author H. L. Wells did a fine job of explaining this new approach in a magazine article from 1887. Quote, "For nearly a century, the government of the United States has pursued a policy so unphilosophical in principle and so unjust in practice that this period has been very aptly characterized by a gifted writer as a century of dishonor," he wrote. Then he went on to make his larger point, that Native Americans were, as he saw it, far too naive and barbaric to function in a civilized society, that government policy up to that point had been to take advantage of that naivete by swindling them with contracts and treaties, and that what was really needed to remedy the situation was to give the Indians the tools they needed to thrive in the American mainstream, whether they wanted them or not. Old, quote, "barbaric habits and trappings of a long-gone life, such as tribal affiliation, native languages, and other cultural touchstones, were considered to be holding these young Native Americans back. They had to be wiped away. What was needed was a system in which children were taken away from those influences, cut off from them entirely, and raised to adulthood as an American rather than as an Indian. That was the idea." The result of this new way of thinking about Native Americans was a system of boarding schools all across the country, of which Shamawa was the second one to be established. These schools took six-year-old Native American children and, in essence, tried to reprogram them. They learned basic schoolwork in classrooms, trades like blacksmithing and shoe repair and shop. They worked to make their schools as self-sufficient as possible. These boarding schools were also like a modern immersion school in that the only language spoken there was English. School administrators also took pains to collect as eclectic an array of Native American tribe members as they could and bring them from far away so as to weaken the desire to keep the old ways alive. At Shamawa in particular, this program seems to have resulted in some very good things, primarily because it didn't work out how its architects had planned. Native American youths from all over the country, brought together by an overweening authority bent on telling them what to do, reacted in precisely the way that teenagers have reacted to that sort of thing throughout time, by subverting it. And in the process, they discovered a few new things. For one thing, they discovered the unity of diversity. Paiute children born in Nevada befriended kids from the Sitka tribe in Alaska, people they might never have known existed had it not been for boarding school. In 1887, just 7 years into its operations, Shamawa was home to about 200 children from 29 different tribes, from the close-by Kalapuya to the distant Chippewa and Crow. The man in the 1880s hoped this diversity would cause the children to drop their tribal feelings and forget their tribal traditions and replace them with this new mainstream culture that they were being offered. Instead, the Indian kids came together in secret opposition to the administration's agenda, and the result was a pan-Indian cultural awareness along with a familiarity and comfort with mainstream culture, a suite of social skills that gave them what they probably needed most, a sense of identity. By all accounts, most kids responded to Shamawa very well. It's hard to find bitter recriminatory accounts of time spent there, despite the fact that the first several months for a non-English-speaking six-year-old at the school must have been positively traumatic. The first students in the 1880s were essentially forced to go, but by the early 1900s, tribal families were actually asking the boarding school to accept their children. The skills they'd learned there were much more valuable than anything they could get on the reservation, and public schools were not yet open to them. That's something that wouldn't change in some parts of the country until 1948. The students at Shemawa were hard workers, too. Although the school started out on a few acres leased from Pacific University in Forest Grove, it was soon moved to a home of its own, a 170-acre parcel that's part of its present campus. Then the students started working to improve their school, picking hops and beans and providing other services. They earned or fundraised all the money that was used to expand their campus. By 1947, the students had almost tripled the size of their school grounds, bringing it to 457 acres, including a farm and a 35-acre orchard. It was reduced to its current size by the Interstate 5 freeway project 10 years later. Today, Shemawa is still a boarding school, but it's strictly a high school. This makes sense. The authorities, no longer fooling themselves into thinking it's morally okay to brainwash children, have fully embraced the wisdom of those early students who found cultural unity and identity in the diversity of tribal backgrounds of their fellow students. It's in high school that a young person starts thinking about the things that make him or her different and special and all that. Students in Shemawa are encouraged to take pride in their heritage and celebrate it at every opportunity. The walls of its hallways are festooned with student art, and the traditions of dozens of different tribes and regions, and powwows and other gatherings are regular events there. Thousands of kids have attended Shemawa over its 130-year run, and many have made a point of sending their own children there in turn. Alumni have rallied several times in the last century to save the school when the Bureau of Indian Affairs moved to close it, despite the best efforts of its founders, who created it expressly to destroy Indian culture. Shemawa has done the exact opposite. Today, it is itself a cultural treasure. Ironic, isn't it? Key sources in this story included works by Sue Ann Reddick, the West Shore Magazine, and the Shemawa Indian School website. Well, that's our show for today. Thanks again for listening, and I do hope you enjoyed it. This podcast is part of Offbeat Oregon History, a public history resource for the state we love. What you're listening to is a reading from one of more than 300 newspaper columns published between 2008 and today. Other Offbeat Oregon goodies include a Facebook page, a Twitter feed, a fleet of Pinterest boards, a ton of great historic photos, and a bunch more stuff, including visuals for today's show and full citations to sources, all accessible via our hub page at offbeatoregon.com. The podcast is covered under a Creative Commons license. For details of that, see offbeatoregon.com/cc. Our theme music is by the Atlas String Band and was written by Carmen Ficarra. Listen and download more at atlasstringband.com. Questions, critiques, ideas for a show I might do? Email me at finn@offbeatoregon.com. You can also ping me on Twitter @offbeatoregon. Episodes of Offbeat Oregon History come out every weekday morning around 6 a.m., so the next one will be on your device and ready to go soon. Until then, go fill up the rest of today with good stuff. Bye now.